Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Megillah daf Tes. We're behind on daf Ches and Aleph. We're starting at the Mishnah, the third Mishnah on the Amud. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf of Lulun Zecher Nishmas Lo Subin Zaltzman. And we are in the middle of the Mishnah called Ein Bein. There are no differences except the last Mishnah that dealt with the topic of Megillah was in yesterday's daf. Was in daf, actually, Friday's daf was on daf Zayin. Where the Mishnah over there records that there's no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni except for Mikra Megillah. And so they, once the Mishnahs have gotten into this format of Ein Bein, so the Mishnah for the remainder of the first parak stays in this format of Ein Bein. And so the Mishnahs are now going to talk about various topics throughout Shas, and we're going to really cover a large gamut of topics within Halacha, and basically describe Ein Bein. We're going to take A, we're going to take B, we're going to compare, we're going to contrast. And I'm going to say that essentially A and B are the same, except for one notable difference. And from there, the Gemara then segues into some a little bit of discussion regarding these points. These are obviously towards Megillah. These are totally tangential to the topic of Megillah. But the format of Ein Bein is what's consistent and what keeps what strings everything together. We are already on now on the third Mishnah of Daf Ches Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah starts off Ein Bein Zava Rosh Sebi Yil Zav Rosh Shalosh Ela Karban. The only difference between a Zav who sees two, who has two discharges versus that who has three discharges is only but carbon. So again, let me give a brief introduction. Like with all these Mishnahs, we're just going to need a little bit of introduction to just get ourselves planted into the topic. We are now talking about a Zav. Now when it comes to a man and a woman, so there is a Tumah known as Tumah Zav. The Torah describes it in Vayikra, Perek Yud Aleph, and it basically goes as follows. A man who has a discharge, so similar to a seminal discharge, although not exactly the same, the Mishnayos note that there are some actual physical differences between a seminal discharge, which is called a Balkeri, versus that of a Zav. Different coloration, different viscosity. But anyway, okay, so I guess in modern terminology, if you want to, I'm not giving a definition, just giving some sort of modern understanding, it's almost like gonorrhea. But basically, a man has a discharge. It's not a seminal discharge. So that's what's called a zav, and the man becomes tameh with a discharge. Now, how many times he has a discharge will affect the degree of tumah. If he has but one discharge, one zav discharge, so then he's like a balkeri. If he has two zav discharges, so then he's what's called a zav gadol. He's a major zav. If he has three, he too is also going to be a major zav. So then what's the difference between two versus three? So that's exactly what our mission is describing. The only difference between 2 versus 3 is that by 2 he's a Zav Gadol, he's a major Zav, and by 3 he has a requirement to bring a Karban. Okay, let's just go over the basic halacha so that we understand what are we looking at over here, what are we talking about. So when the man has one Zav discharge, so then as I mentioned, he's a Balkari, right? A Balkari has a light degree of Tumah, meaning he is a Tumah. May not be an avatama. May be that his status is only a rishon l'tumah. But okay. But in other words, he has tumah. But it's not a major tumah. Once he has a second discharge. Now, when I say second discharge for a man, it does not matter whether he has two discharges in one day or two discharges on two different days. But they have to be two consecutive days. So either way, he's now a major zav. And what does that mean? It means in terms of halacha, he's an avatama. He's a source of tumah. Furthermore, the way he transmits tumah, in addition to magan masa, to carrying something and to touching something, he also transmits tumah through what's called mishkav u'moshav, a special transmission of tumah dedicated to the zav, which means that if he sits down on something which was meant to be sat on, so the object that he's sitting on is going to become tameh, the same degree that he's tameh. Generally speaking, in the transmission of tumah from one item to another item, it's always going to drop down a level. However, when the zav sits on an item, this is what's called tumas mishkav u'moshav, so the item becomes tameh to the same degree that he's tameh. And so when this man has this second discharge, so now he's a zav gadol, he's a major zav, and so now he's going to be tameh mishkav u'moshav. He sits on an item, the item becomes tummy to the same degree. And as Rashi points out over here, even if he doesn't make actual physical contact with the item. So that means that let's say I have 10 chairs stacked one on top of another, and he sits on the 10 chairs. All 10 chairs which supported his weight are going to be tummy, an avatumah. Just like he is an avatumah. Okay, this is all for the zav. How does he remedy his Tumah? So he has to count what's called Shemen Akim, 7 clean days, which means that after his discharges are over, he has to go through 7 days in which he has no discharge. If at any point during the 7 days he has any discharge, so that will upset his count, and he's got to count again, count anew. This is all for the Zav who had 2 discharges. What about for the 3rd discharge? So again, we're talking now about a scenario where a man has 3 discharges, either all 3 of them in 1 day, or 3 of them in 2 days, or 3 of them in 3 days, but again, each day he has a discharge. There's no break. So now he's a major Zav, and the only difference between the Zav who has 2 discharges versus the Zav who has 3 discharges is a karbon, meaning that if the man has 3 discharges, so then he is going to have to count Shiv and Akim, just like when he saw 2 discharges, at the conclusion of a Shiv and Akim, 7 clean days, he then on the 8th day is going to have to bring a karbon, then and only then is he allowed entrance into the Beis HaMikdash.
What happens to the object?
It's tummy. And now is the tummy, it's an avatoma, remedying that item, making it tower, is to take it and put it in the mikvah.
Okay. Did they have such a big mikvah with all these things that I
did? The assumption is yes. Every item was put into the mikvah. We talked about putting beds and couches and sofas into the mikvah. Yeah, that's I know it sounds unusual to us, but yes. Okay, so that's the Mishnah, and just a very short introduction to the whole topic.
No,
in other words, you need the process of Shiv Nikim, 7 clean days,
and.
No. It's there. It's there, and it remains there. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. Halayin Yemishka V'Moshe V'Sfir Shiva Ziviz Eshavin. So the Gemara makes the comment, which again, once you heard the introduction, so then the Gemara's 2 comments are correct, meaning based on what we said. So, and of course, based on the things that what I said is based on the Gemara. So as far as Mishka V'Moshe is concerned, meaning the transmission of Tumah, any item that they sit on is going to become Tameh, plus the requirement to count 7 clean days, that is going to be the same for the man who had 2 discharges versus the man who had 3. Menahani Miladhan Rabbanan, the Gemara now is going to darshan this based on Psukim. Rabbi Simai Omer Manakas of Shtam Vikarutame, Shalosh Vikarutame. Open up a Chumash, you'll see, open up to Perikid Alf of Vayikra, and you're going to see that in Perikid Alf Pasuk Beis versus Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Beis, it describes the Zav, and it mentions the word. And it mentions the word Zav 2 times. And Pasuk Gimel says Zav, and it mentions it 3 times. Just quickly grab a Chumash. I'm sure you trust me, but nice to hear the Pesukim inside. Okay, this is Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph. Vayidbar Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron le'mor aleihem Dabru b'nei Yisrael le'mor zos hachaya. Sorry, wrong parak. That's why it's good to open up the Chumash. I'm sorry. Yeah. Let's right. After, I'm sorry. After. Right. End of Mitzvah. Vayidbar Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron le'mor Dabru b'nei Yisrael le'mor aleihem. There we go. Ish ki es zav mi b'saro. This is pasuk beis. Zav mi b'saro zovo tamehu. So you see that the word zav is mentioned twice. So that is referring to the man who had 2 discharges. Next pasuk gimel v'zosi etumaso b'zovo. That's 1. Rab b'saro zovo. That's 2. Oechtim b'saro mizovo. That's 3. Tumaso he. So he is tameh. Okay. Sorry. Correction. Not perikid alf, but rather perik hazvav. So we have 2 pesukim. One mentioning the word zav twice, and the second pasuk gimel mentioning the word zav 3 times. And so back to our Gemara, Rabbi Simai Omer Manakas of Shtayim Mekarutame Shalosh Mekarutame Ketzad Shtayim Letuma Shalosh Lekarban. So therefore, what the Torah is coming to add is that when a man has 2 discharges, so then he's tameh. When he has 3, we're going to add a layer to his tuma, which is the requirement to bring a karbon at the conclusion of his tahara process. So the Gemara says, the Eimar, now let's suggest that, shtayim l'tumah v'lo l'karbon, that add to when he has two discharges, so he'll be tameh, but no carbon. And shalosh le carbon v'lo le tama. And then when he has his third re'iyah, his third discharge. By the way, the Mishnah is always referred to a discharge as a re'iyah, right? Like he visually saw it, right? There is no word in Lashon HaKodesh that actually describes a discharge. Okay, it's Lashon HaKodesh, right? Hebrew is a holy language, and there are no words in the Torah. This is Rambam's point. It's not my point. There are no words in the Torah that describes bodily functions, like urinating and defecating. There are no words in Lashon HaKodesh that actually they're euphemisms. But there are no actual words that describe it. So there's no word in the Torah for a discharge. So anyway, parenthetical note. Back to the Gemara. The Emar Shnayim L'Tumah V'lo L'Karban. So let's suggest that when he has two discharges, he'll be Tameh, but there's no carbon requirement. And Shlalosh L'Karban V'lo L'Tumah. And when he has three discharges, it will be he'll have to bring a carbon, but it'll not be Tameh. Now that suggestion of the Gemara is so difficult to understand. Meaning, with his third discharge, he'll have the carbon requirement, but he won't be tummy anymore. It's very hard, even as a suggestion, very hard to hear. Now Rashi does point out that the Gemara doesn't mean that he'll be totally expunged of his tumma, but maybe with the third discharge, he'll be downgraded to a lighter form of tumma. That's how Rashi understands the Gemara. But even still, the suggestion of the Gemara is very difficult. And the Gemara recognizes immediately such a difficult suggestion. Yeah, the Gemara says, you know, it's funny. By the time you have your third discharge, you know you had two, right? It's just, that's how numbers work, right? You can't have three without having had two. So, right, it's such a logical point, and I know we all saw it coming. And so, you know, obviously what the Gemara meant in the Havamina requires more analysis, but not for now. But okay, let's move on. The Emar Shtayim L'Karban V'lo L'Tumah Shalosh Af L'Tumah. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. Why don't we suggest the following? When he had two discharges, he'll be required to bring a carbon. And when he has three discharges, he'll be Tameh with the Chomer Tumah, with the more stringent Tumah of Mishkav Moshe. Maybe that's what the term means. The Gemara says, Lo Sakadacha. The Gemara says, no. That's not a bad suggestion. But the Gemara says, but we're not going to accept that suggestion. Why not? The Tanya, because the Gemara says, we have another Braisa. He'll become purified from his discharge. The key word over here is me. And what does that word me mean? From his discharge. So mixes of him and carbon, and mixes of him and carbon. Not every zav is going to bring a carbon. Some and some don't. Now, haketzat, so what does that mean? Some do and some don't. Rashosh maybe, shtaimina maybe. If you saw three discharges, you have to bring a carbon. If you only saw two discharges, you don't have to bring a carbon. Alaino ala ra beis maybe ra shalosh eno maybe. The Gemara says, now why don't we invert that? Why don't we say that if you see two discharges, you have to bring a carbon. If you saw three discharges, you don't have to bring a carbon. The Gemara says, again, the point which we all see coming. So amart ashalo ra shalosh ra shtayim. Again, just in terms of how numbers work, you can't get to three without having gone through two. Okay, just there's no way to do it. And that means then that even if you had your third discharge, and the third discharge, you don't have to bring a carbon, but if you had a three, you obviously had two. And if you had two, then you have to bring a carbon, and then that means everyone's going to bring a carbon, and then we don't have, and then the pasuk doesn't make any sense. Some zavim bring a carbon, some don't. Well, if the threshold for carbon is two, every zav is going to be bringing carbon. So therefore, we're going to go back to our original suggestion, two your tummy, but with no carbon requirement. Three discharges, you have to bring a carbon. Now we understand. Some zavim won't bring a carbon. That's the Baal Shtei Re'iyos. Some zavim will have to bring a carbon. That's the Baal Gimel Re'iyos. Okay. The Itzrich, the Rebbe Simai, the Itzrich Mizovo. Now basically what we've done is we have now have two drushas to get us to the same exact point. The point is that when a man has two discharges, he's Tameh, he's a zav, but no carbon requirement. When he has three discharges, he's Tameh, he's a zav, he has to go through the process of Shiva Nikim. He then has to bring a carbon. Okay, and we've arrived at that conclusion using a drasha by Rabbi Simai and using the drasha of Mizavo. And the Gemara points out both drashas are necessary. V'itzruch the Rabbi Simai, v'itzruch Mizavo, even the Rabbi Simai, have I mean a kikushan. If all I had was Rabbi Simai, so then I would have been bothered by the question that we asked previously. What was the question that we asked previously? Remember that the Gemara's suggestion was that maybe two a karban, three, tumah chamura. That was our question. In other words, if I just had the two psukim. So that's why I needed the drush of mizovo. Kamashmala mizovo. The e mizovo layadana kamarias kamashmala under Rabbi Simai. Now, if all I had was a drush of mizovo, so good. That would have told us that if I had X number of discharges, the man would be tameh. If I had X plus one number of discharges, the man would have to bring a karban. The only problem is, it's just a variable. We don't know what the actual number is. So that's why I needed Rabbi Simai, because Rabbi Simai actually told us what X is equal to. X is 2. 2 for it to be a zav, 2 plus 1, 3 in order to bring a karban. So the Gemara says, okay. Good. At this point, at this juncture in the Gemara, all we have done, which is not a small thing, is that we have lent support to our Mishnah using drushas. The drusha of Rabbi Simai, the drusha of Mizavo, and the Gemara's explanation of why we need both. The Gemara now continues, as long as you're drushing the word, excuse me, Mizavo, so let's explain the following. So what does the pasuk mean when it says, V'chi yitar zav, Mizavo, and the zav will become purified from Mizavo. And again, the word mi means some of them. What does that mean? This is at the end of the Torah's discussion of the Zav. This is Pasuk Yud Gimel. So, my darash tibay, ha'umi bai l'chadetani v'chi yitar zav l'cheshayafsik. So, v'chi yitar zav means l'cheshayafsik. Meaning, at what point in time can you start counting shem and nekiyim? You have to stop. Meaning, the man has to stop discharging. Then and only then can you start counting shem and nekiyim. Rashi points out over here, he doesn't have to tov on the mikvah. Meaning, obviously, purification from a tumah is going to require tefillah in the mikvah. That goes without saying. That's always part of the tahara process. However, for the man to start counting his shiv and nekiyim, he doesn't need to tov on the mikvah. All he needs to do is stop discharging. Once the man stops discharging, then he can start counting his shiv and nekiyim, the 7 clean days. That's the first drasha of v'chi yitar azav lichishe yafsik. Mizavo v'lo mizvivo v'nigo. Rashi explains what does this mean. It means as follows. I'm not going to read Rashi inside. I'm just going to paraphrase. See Rashi for this, for more in depth. But basically as follows. Let's say the poor guy over here, not only is he having zav discharges, but on top of that, he also has saras. Okay, he's got issues. Okay, he's dealing with two impurities in life. Number one, he's a zav. And number two, concurrently, he also has saras. Okay, doctors, you probably have seen this, where a person is dealing with two ailments at the same time. And so now, the issue is, I know we're speaking about spiritual matters, but basically, can I treat one while he's still experiencing the other? Okay, so that's basically the issue. In terms of tumah, the answer to that is yes. Meaning, as long as he has stopped having his zav discharge, so he can start counting his shiv and nekiyim, even though he's still also currently experiencing tumas mitzora. So even though he's still tameh from his saras, he can still count shiv and nekiyim. Now you have to see Rashi inside, because Rashi does deal with the issue. It's a very simple issue. Well, what good is it if he counts shiv and nekiyim when all said and done, ultimately, he's still tameh from his saras? So what does it help him that he's going to be able to count his shiv and nekiyim? So you'll see Rashi inside, and Rashi goes and explicates that matter. Okay, but anyway, but that's the basic point over here, that he can count shiv and nekiyim even though you're experiencing tumah from other sources. No. Mitzvah doesn't have Mishkav Moshav. Mishkav Moshav is specific to the Zav. Oh, so you're good. So perfect. You thought of Rashi. That's Rashi's point. So mizavav v'nigo, mizavav v'safar liman azav v'ashevriyos shetam sfira shiva. Now the zav v'ashevriyos, the zav who had two re'iyos, so he counts 7 clean days. Now I know we made this point earlier, but okay, the bryce here is going to say it again. V'alo denu imitam imishkav v'moshav lo yitam sfira shiva. So the Gemara says, isn't that a logical deduction? Meaning, if you're so tameh that you sit on a chair and the chair becomes an avatoma, so of course you need to count 7 clean days. The Gemara uses what's called logic, right? A svara, logical deduction. Now, I know in general there is nothing logical about Tumah Tahara. What's the basis for the logic? So the Gemara attempts to use a logical argument. Turn the Amud. We're now in Ches Amud Beis. The Gemara says logic will not work here. Shomeres Yom Kineged Yom Tochiach Shemitami Mishkav Moshe Veinam Mitami Sfir Sheva. And so the Gemara says logic won't work here. Why not? Because of women. Okay. Now again, not to be taken out of context, but the women are going to upset the logic. What does that mean? Because we know that just like a man has the ability to have a zav discharge to make him tame, a woman also can have a zav discharge, and we'll call it a zava, just to be grammatically correct. A woman who has a zava discharge, so she too now will become a zava, but for her, the halachas are a little bit different. First of all, for her, it is basically it's bleeding. It's just not during her menstrual cycle, not during her yemei nida, but rather it's what's called during her yemei ziva. And for her, in order to be a zava, so she needs to see it either 1 or 2 days during her yemei ziva. 7 days for yemei nida, 11 days for yemei ziva. I'm really not doing justice in terms of explanation, but just for now, let's just say that. So if she sees either 1 or 2 days during her yemei ziva, she's a zava gedola. What does she need to do in order to become tahor? Only one clean day. Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom. That's all she needs. So you see that a woman who is a Zava, and even though she's Metame Mishkav Omoshav, does not need to count 7 clean days, but only 1 clean day. When does a woman have to count Shiva Nakim? That's only if she saw during 3 consecutive days Dam Ziva. Then and only then does she need to count Shiva Nakim. So you see that the Gemara wanted to construct a logical argument. Well, if you're Metame Mishkav Moshev, don't you have to count 7 clean days? The answer is no. That's not a logical argument, because it's not. We have a precedent where a woman becomes a Zava and she only needs to count 1 clean day. So the Gemara says, fine, so we don't have logic. So So what do we learn out from the word mizovo in this context? Mizovo means that even though you're a partial zav, what does that mean, partial zav? Even though you didn't see gimel re'ios, you didn't have 3 discharges, you only had 2 discharges, you still have to count 7 clean days. Okay, that's what the Braitha learns out from this mizovo. Good. We have basically made the same point that we made earlier. It's just that now we darshan the word mizovo. Okay, so just in conclusion, we have now basically learned the following. A Zav Bal Shei Rios has to count Shiva Nakiyim, is Metame Mishkav Moshav until he's Tahor. Good. A Zav Bal Shalosh Rios, same as a Bal Shei Rios, the only notable difference is that at the end of the Shiva Nakiyim, on the 8th day, he has to bring a carbon. Right, one chatas, one ola, in order for him to be allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, and the Gemara's discussion were basically all the drushes that got us to that point. Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, we're on Ches Amud Beis, we're at the first word line. Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, Maishna Hai Mizavo De Marbi Beizav Bal Shei Re'ios, U Maishna Hai Mizavo De Mamayit Beizav Bal Shei Re'ios. So Rav Papa noted that previously when we had the word Mizavo, we were excluding the Zav who had 2 discharges, and in the most current Mizavo, we included the Zav who had 2 Re'ios. So right in the previous Drasha, we said that the Zav Bal Shei Re'ios is excluded from a Karban. Now we're saying from the word Mizavo that the Zav Bal Shei Re'ios is included in that he has to count 7 clean days. So it seems to be inconsistent whether Mizavo is an inclusionary term or an exclusionary term. Well, the answer is going to be it can be both. So Amr Lei Is Agadacha Hailamute Hudas Lisha Kramine Bichi. I'm sorry, Lisha Kramine. So the Gemara says context. Here in the most recent Drasha, the Torah could have just simply taken out the word Mizovo. Vichitema Asi Medina Shomer Yom Kenega Yom Tochiach. And maybe you'll tell me, well, what about the logical argument? There is no logical argument again because the woman who's a Zava doesn't need to count 7 clean days. V'chitei mahami ba'ilei mizavah v'lo minigo. What about the previous halacha? where we learned that the person who is suffering from two tumas concurrently, he's both a zav and he's a mitzara. And previously we needed the word mizava to teach us that despite the fact that he's suffering from two, as long as he stopped discharging, he can start counting as Shimon Akiyim, despite the fact that he still has tumat saras. So don't we need mizava to teach us that halacha? The Gemara says, no. Imkin lichzakra v'chi yiter hazav. V'lishtok mizava. I'm sorry, v'lishtok. The Torah could have just stopped at the word hazav. The word mizava is superfluous. So lamili limin hazav al shevi yoshetan sfer sheva. And now that we see that the word mizava is totally superfluous, so therefore the word mizava is coming to teach us that the zav al shevi rios also has to count shivin akiyim. Okay. Next. Ein bein mitzora muzgal and mitzora mochlat ela prio frima. Okay, the only difference between a mitzorah muzgar and a mitzorah muchlat, we know that the Torah, same parsha, parsha's mitzorah, we know that, actually, we're going to back it up. One parsha, parsha's tazria. So if a man or a woman has tzara'as, so either one of two things is going to happen. Well, actually, one of three things is going to happen. He's going to go to a kohen, the kohen could say, no, that's not tzara'as, that's nothing. Okay, or you can go to a Kohen and the Kohen say to him, unclear, undetermined, we're going to have to wait, sequesters the person for 7 days, comes out, and now looks at it again, and then we'll render a decision. Or the third possibility is the Kohen looks at it and says, okay, it demonstrates all the symptoms of tzaras, you are a mitzora. Now, when you are sequestered for 7 days, you're what's called a mitzora muzgar. You are a sequestered mitzora. When the Kohen determines that you're actually a mitzora, meaning this is symptomatic of a mitzora, so you're a mitzora muchlat. Good. What's the difference between a mitzora muzgar and a mitzora muchlat? That's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that the only difference between a mitzora muzgar and a mitzora muchlat is ella priya ufrima. The only difference between them is the requirement to let your hair grow and to tear your clothing. If you are a mitzora muchlat, you have to let your hair grow, and you have to tear your clothing. If you're a muzgar, if you're just being sequestered, so you don't have to let your hair grow, and you don't have to tear your clothing. Ein bein tara mutoch hezgo l'tara mitoch hechlet, ela techlacha tiglachas v'tziparim. In terms of the tahara process is concerned, if you are coming out of a 7-day sequestered period versus coming out of being definitely a mitzora, the only difference between them is the shaving of your entire body and the procedure of the birds, which is mentioned in the beginning of Parshas Mitzora. But in both of them, you're going to have to tovel in the mikvah. Okay. Ha le'inyan, let's go right to the Gemara. Ha le'inyan shiluach v'tuma zevezeh shavim. In terms of, meaning we're going back to the first point of the Mishnah, and the Kohen either arriving at a conclusion of, I don't know, let's wait and see, being sequestered, mitzora muzgar, versus, oh yeah, that's definitely mitzora. We know what the Mishnah tells us is what's the difference between them. Where are they similar? So the Gemara says they're similar in that you're sent outside of the machane. That's one. Rashi over here writes, outside the walls of the city, because the Shechina is the Azara, Machane Leviah is Har Abayis, Machane Yisrael is Yerushalayim, meaning that which is circumscribed by the wall. You're sent outside the wall, outside of the third Machane, and so both of them have to be sent out, and also Tameh, meaning both of them are going to be Tameh. It's interesting. The Muzgar is Tameh, meaning you could have made the argument that, well, the Kohen doesn't know, meaning he came out with an indeterminate conclusion. And meanwhile, the chiddush of our Gemara is that no, that a muzgar is also tummy. Okay. Minani milay detani Rav Shmuel bar Yisrael kamed Rav Huna v'tiarel haKohen misfachas he v'chibas bigadav v'tahir. So he becomes tahor. Misfachas he, misfachas is a term used in the Torah to describe tzaras. And chibas bigadav, he washes his clothing. Washing his clothing in this context means to tefillin in the mikvah. Vitaher, and he becomes tahor. So tamri priyo prima demikara, he becomes purified from priyo prima, meaning he doesn't need to let his hair grow and he doesn't need to tear his clothing, which would indicate that everything else, as vis-a-vis all other halachas, he's a mitzora. So amalei rabba lemiata gabi zav dechsev. So the Gemara says, well, That's how you're going to explain this pasuk. So let's look at another pasuk in the context of the zav. V'chibetz begadav v'taher, and he launders his clothing and he becomes tahor. And again, hasamai v'tahor mikariika. Now you want to tell me v'tahor means that he was originally tahor? We're talking about a zav. We're talking about a man who had a discharge. What does that mean? He was never tahor to begin with. He was tahor all the way from the beginning. No, he wasn't. He had a discharge. So ella tahor hashem l'tamik licheres beheset. Avagav dehader chazei lo mitame lemafreya hachinami tahor hashem l'tame bebiya lemafreya. So the Gemara says, you know what the word v'tahor means? It means as follows. Look, as we discussed, when it comes to a zav, he needs to count 7 clean days. When does he tovel in the mikvah? Okay, so the correct answer is on the 7th clean day. Meaning the zav at the end of a shiv nikim does not need to wait until night to tovel in the mikvah. He can tovel on the 7th clean day. Now there always is going to run a risk, which is that when you tovel on the 7th clean day, so you may have a discharge later that day. If you do, that will upset your entire count and you're going to have to count again. So it's an interesting halacha. You tovel the mikvah on the 7th day, but meanwhile, after you tovel the mikvah, you still run the risk of having to count all over again. Now, let's say you tovel the mikvah, which means that you're tahor, and it's still left time left in the 7th day, and you touch something. And then after you touch something, you touch a kli, after you touch a kli, you then have a discharge. So now you have to start counting again. Do we say that the time now between your tefillah and the mikvah and your discharge now gets totally overrun? Meaning the status of that time now is going to be that you're a zav, because you have to start counting again. That's what the Torah is telling us with the word v'taher. V'taher tells us that after he tovels in the mikvah, until he has the discharge later in the 7th day, he is tahor, even though he's going to have to count his seven clean days again. Still, during that interim period, he's going to be tahor.
It would be a new occurrence.
No. That's the interesting part of this discussion. It's not a new occurrence. It still now brings him back to his original occurrence, but that interim period is still going to be a period of tahara.
A new occurrence would require 7 days again.
Correct. Correct, but the 7 clean days is because he never successfully counted the 7 clean days from the original discharge.
But in a way, they're treating him as though he had the chazakah, you know, like for the 3 days that he was tall and he went to the mikvah, they're assuming that he was...
Correct. Agreed. Look, it's interesting, and the Gemara is saying that's what we learn from the pasuk v'taher. Similarly, by the mitzora, that's exactly what the word v'taher means regarding the mitzora, meaning same basic story. He's also going to count 7 clean days. He's also going to be able to tov in the mikvah on the 7th day, and the point being is that after he tovels in the mikvah, he goes into a house, and then afterwards he comes out, and then afterwards the tzaras comes back again. So once again, it will require him to count a new 7 clean days, but that interim period, he's actually going to be tahor. Elam Rava Mehacha. So Rava says, you're right. Right, your point is very well taken. So therefore, we're going to have a new pasuk. V'hatzara asher bo hanaga, misha tzarasa tluya begufo, yatzazeh she'in tzarasa tluya begufo, ela biyamim. I will give you a drasha in terms of why there is a difference between a mitzora muzgar versus a mitzora muchlat. You see, by the mitzora muzgar, the sequestered mitzora, what is everything contingent on? He's got to wait. He has to wait a week. So therefore, his saras is really much more connected with the clock and with the day than it is with his own body. He just simply has to wait a week. As opposed to the mitzora muchlat, when the kohen renders the decision that is absolute saras, the only way that he will be alleviated from his saras is only when the saras is no longer on his body. So his saras is connected with his body, not with the clock. So the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye, let me ask to call you Me'asher. Kol yemei asher nega bo yitma, mi shetzaras tluya begufo, had the town shiluch, v'shein tzaras tluya begufo, ain't town shiluach. So the Gemara says, okay, now that we're striking that distinction, so it does sound like from the psukim that the only mitzvah that needs to be sent away is only someone who has tzaras connected to his body, meaning a mitzvah muchlat. But meanwhile, we learned in our Mishnah, and the first point of the Gemara is that both have to be sent outside the camp. But But the Gemara points out, but that's not what we said. We said that both of them have to be sent out. Amarle, Yemei, Kol Yemei, L'rabos Mitzorim, L'zgar L'shiluach. So the Gemara says, look, your point is good, but we have a special drasha that tells us that both Mitzorahs have to be sent outside the camp. We have the word Yemei, but then we have the word Kol Yemei. The Kol is a ribui, it includes both types of Mitzorah. Both the one that's sequestered because of an indecision versus the one who was rendered that he is positive tzaras. My time alone. So why is it then that the Muzgar, the one that was sent away for 7 days just because he's being sequestered, so why doesn't he have to go through the process of shaving his body and the birds? So ein bein tar mitoch hezgal tar mitoch echle el tiglachos v'tziparim. I'm Rabbi. I'm a krav. V'yasa koin amechutz amachaneh v'hinei nirpa nega tzaras. Because when you go to the beginning of Parshas Mitzora, where there the Torah goes through the procedure of the birds, the Torah says that the koin investigates. The koin looks at the man, and he was healed from his tzaras. So misha tzaras t'tuli b'refuos yasazesh shein tzaras t'tuli b'refuos ela b'yamin. That's speaking specifically and only to the Mitzorah of the Mukhlat, meaning where his remedy, his therapy will be that he is free and clear from Tzaras on his body. And that's not like the Muzgar, where the Muzgar is really only waiting for 7 days to come and go. Fine. Yes, yes. In other words, he's tummy. The Muzgar is tummy. Right, correct. But he doesn't have the procedure of the tziparim and the tiglachas. Okay, very good. Next, ein bein. Ein bein tefillin l'tefillin l'mezuzos el shar asfarim nechtavim b'chol lashon u'tefillin mezuzos ein nechtavos ela ashuris. A sefer Torah, says our Mishnah, is no different than tefillin and mezuzos. Now we understand tefillin mezuzos is basically a mini sefer Torah. Okay, a meaning, it's written on cloth. You write the sofer, writes the parshios in a mezuzah, two parshios. In tefillin, four parshios. But in other words, it's basically a small section of the Torah. However, our Mishnah points out, there's only but one difference between the two of them. Between the Sefer versus tefillin and mezuzah. Now, interesting. Look at the first Rashi on our Mishnah. When our Mishnah is talking about Sfarim, what is our Mishnah talking about? All of Tanakh. Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. What's the difference between Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim versus tefillin and mezuzah? Mishnah, super interesting. The Mishnah says, when it comes to Sefer, it can be written in any language. And Tefillin Mezuzah, and Tefillin Mezuzah can only be written in Hebrew. Okay, just one interesting point I'll mention over here in terms of Ashuris. Ashuris, right, first of all, what Ashuris is Hebrew? Yes. But also, it's not just Hebrew, but it's speaking about a specific type of script. It's what we're looking at when we look at Chumash. When we look at Chumash, we're basically looking at block letters. Okay, right. The basic shape is 90 degree angles, basically. Understood, not always, but basically block letters. So that is what's called Ksav Ashuris, as opposed to there's another way to write Hebrew. You're probably not familiar. I would venture to say that most people have never even seen it inside, and that's what's called Ksav Ivri. Ksav Ivri. And I think the academics refer to it as Phoenician script. Okay, I don't want to sound like an academic, because I'm not. But I believe they refer to it as Phoenician script. It's much more circular in shape. Geometrically, the letters look like a circle, not like a square. Okay, so there are basically two ways to write the Hebrew language. One is called Ksav Ashuris, and the other one is called Ksav Ivri. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a discussion of whether or not Ksav Ivri was the original or not the original. Somewhere in the early Chaf area in Sanhedrin, Chaf Aleph, Chaf Beis, somewhere around there, the Gemara there has that discussion. The debate, actually, yes. The assumption is that the writing the Sefer Torah was originally written in Ksav Ashuris. When we get to Sanhedrin, so you again, there's going to be more discussion about that. I'm just explaining right now what this language of Ashuris is. Ashuris is Hebrew, but specifically the block letters that we see in a Sefer Torah. Okay, so a tefillah mezuzahs have to be written in Ksav Ashuris. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af b'sfarim lo itir shiichtavu el yavanis. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that even when it comes to Sfarim, Sfarim can only be written in Hebrew and only but one other language, Greek. And that's it. And for reasons which we'll discuss later on. Okay. How to from beginning to time if Adam Zevazir Shabbat. The Gemara says, outside of that, in terms of all other areas of halacha, they're the same. So in terms of the language in which they're written, so they're different. The tefillin and the mezuzah can only be written in Lashon Ashuris, Ksav Ashuris, Lashon Ashuris, and Sfarim can be written in any language, but in terms of the requirement to stitch them up with sinew, meaning when I stitch them together, they have to be stitched with sinew. Mezuzah, by the way, it's interesting. Mezuzah, there's no stitching, meaning a mezuzah is written on one parchment, the two parshios, so a little bit difficult to understand exactly what it means over here. I guess what the Gemara's point is over here, but I'm guessing, I don't know this to be so, is that you could, by a mezuzah, write on two different parchments as long as you stitch it together. But again, I'm... You're right, again, understood. Fine, so, but the point is that if you're going to stitch it together, it has to be stitched with sinews. Rashi points out that there is a debate whether or not, in other words, by other Sfarim, do they have to be stitched with sinew, or can I use any other material to stitch it together? So Rashi over here points out that our Gemara, our Mishnah, takes a very strong position on this matter, that it always that all Sfarim have to be stitched together with Gidim, with sinew, animal sinew. Ulatamas Yadayim, Zevez Hashem, and also Tamas Yadayim. Like we learned the other day, when I touch a sefer with my hands will become Tamei, right? Tamas Yadayim. So vis-a-vis these halachas, a sefer and the tefillin and mezuzah are the same. Sfarim nechtavim b'chol lashon v'rimenu. The Gemara points out our Mishnah seems to be at odds with the Mishnah in Masechta Yadayim. Masechta Yadayim says, the Mishnah says, Mikra shekasav targum, v'targum shekasav mikra, k'sav ivri, eino mitame es hayadayim, ad shiichtevenu b'ksav ashuris, ala sefer uvidyo. If I make any change in a chumash, where something which was supposed to be written in Targum is written in Hebrew, something which was supposed to be written in Hebrew is written in Targum. Rashi over here gives an example. Where in Chumash do we have Targum? Answer? I don't know if it's the only answer, but it's the one Rashi here points out. Yigar Sadusa. Remember, Lav and Yaakov finally come to some sort of agreement, and they get to a place called Galed, and the Torah there says, you know what Lavan refers to it? He refers to it as Yigar Sadusa. You know what that is? That's Aramaic. Aramaic for Galed. Okay, the Hebrew is Galed. Gal-Aid, the mountain of testimony. How do you say that in Aramaic? Yigar Sadusa. So if in the Torah I'm supposed to write Aramaic, meaning I'm supposed to write the words Yigar Sadusa, and instead I write that in Hebrew, or any other part of the Torah where it's supposed to be in Hebrew and I write in Aramaic, the Mishnah Yadayim says that does not have the status of a Sefer. It will only have a status of the Sefer only when I write everything as it should be written in Hebrew letters with ink on parchment. That's it. That's the only thing that has the status of a Sefer Torah. So basically now, a very basic discrepancy between our Mishnah here in Megillah versus Mishnah in Yadayim. Our Mishnah says, a Sefer Torah, or for that matter, let's say like Rashi, all Sfarim, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim, can be written in any language. The Mishnah in Yadayim says, no. For a Mikra to have status of Mikra, has to be written in Hebrew, B'lashon HaKodesh, in Ksav Ashuris. Okay, that's called a stira between two mishnayos. Huh? No, Ashuris means Hebrew. Ashuris is Lashon HaKodesh.
And
understood. But okay, let's just assume I'm correct. It's never a great assumption, but let's just assume I'm correct. It's a reference to Lashon HaKodesh, and it's just being even more specific, not only Lashon HaKodesh, but in the block letter. Okay, Amar Rava. So we're going to have two attempted answers to explain this discrepancy. So the first answer is that of Rava. Although, as you'll see, Rava will go through a number of changes before he finally settles on how to explain the difference between one Mishnah and the other Mishnah. Lo kasha kam begufan shalanu kam begufan shalahem. So the first attempted answer of Rava is, well, it depends what letters you write it in. Meaning, the word gufan over here in this context means the ksiva, the actual letters. If you write it begufan shalanu, Rashi explains that you write it in Hebrew letters, so then you can write in any language you want. Okay? I'm sure everyone at one point in time did this as they were learning how to write in Hebrew. So you write in Hebrew letters, so phonetically you can say whatever you want with using Hebrew language, Hebrew letters. So if you want to spell an English sentence, you can write it in Hebrew letters, just simply matching the phonetic sounds of the English language. So you can write the word, you can write table, write tough, bays, lamed, write, maybe you put a yud in between the test and the bays. Or anyway, and by the way, and that's what they do with Yiddish, right? Okay, fine. In other words, they're using Hebrew letters to spell out the Yiddish language. So the Gemara says, that, Rava says, that has Kedusha Sefer. As long as you're using Hebrew letters, so you can write a Torah in Yiddish, and as long as you're writing Hebrew letters, that is Kedusha Sefer Torah.
The text doesn't matter.
So the language doesn't matter.
But the context, you know, like Time Magazine or translated in Ashuri language,
Okay, fine. Okay, well, a big part of today's discussion is going to be translation. Hopefully, we'll get to it. Okay, so gam begufo shalanu, kan begufo shalahen. But if I write another language, but I write in any other letters other than Hebrew letters, that doesn't have kedusha sefer Torah. That's the difference between the Mishnah Yadayim and our Mishnah. The Mishnah Yadayim, you can write whatever language you want, just has to be Hebrew letters. Our Mishnah, let me do that again, let me do it better. Our Mishnah, you can write any language you want, it has to be in Hebrew letters. That's our Mishnah. The Mishnah Yadayim that says it has to be in Hebrew, meaning it has to be in Hebrew letters. Okay. So the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye ben Mayu kimta lahayi begufa shalahan mayir mikra shekasav targum v'targum shekasav mikra afil mikra shekasav mikra v'targum shekasav targum nami da'aktani ashikhta v'na shirus ala sefer b'dyo. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah Yadayim, you know, it's funny. According to you, the Mishnah Yadayim says, when are you gonna ruin the Sefer Torah? When it's Aramaic and I write in Hebrew. Or when it's Hebrew and I write in Aramaic. I'll tell you the truth. Even if it were Hebrew and I wrote in Hebrew, but once I change the letters, so then it's no longer any good. So why does the Mishnah Yadayim tell me that the only way I'm going to be really ruining the Sefer Torah or taking away its status is when I change languages? That's not true. Even if I don't change languages, but I change letter, you're going to ruin the Sefer Torah. It's not going to have the status of a Sefer Torah. So the Gemara says, I'm really not going to buy that approach. The Gemara rejects this approach. The Gemara is going to give another approach. Elokasha harabana harashim and Gamliel. Okay, so the Gemara says, look, it's a machlokas tanaim. So maybe these two Mishnahs are reflecting two different opinions. So, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Aika Yavanis. The Mishnah Yadayim is going like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, slow down. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you can write a Sefer Torah in Hebrew and in Greek. Our Mishnah told us that. So if the Mishnah Yadayim is going like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, so shouldn't the Mishnah Yadayim also allow Greek as an acceptable language? Elokashi, Kambitzfarim, Kambitzfilim, Mezuzos. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. So maybe the Mishnah, our Mishnah is talking about Sefer Torah. The Mishnah Yadayim is talking about Tefillin Mezuzos. So the Tefillin Mezuzos, my time, Mishud Dichsibahu, Vihayu, Behav Yasan Yehu. And the reason why is because Tefillin Mezuzos, the Torah is more specific in that Tefillin Mezuzos has to be written as is. Vihayu Hadvarim Ha'ila. Vihayu means these words have to be written identical to the original Sefer Torah, with no deviation. Well, as opposed to a Sefer Torah could be written in other languages. Maybe that's the difference between our Mishnah and the Mishnah Yadayim. The Gemara notes the obvious problem with this solution. It's a difficult solution. My Targum, Shekasva Mikra, Ika. So the Gemara says, now, where's their Targum in Mezuzos and in Tefillin? Now, Bishlam, Torah, Ika, Yigar, Sadusa. Now, it happens to be that by Sefer Torah, we know, there's Targum, meaning there's Aramaic, in the words Yikar Sadusa. Elahachem, my Targum Ika. But if it's Tefillin and Mezuzos, well, there's no Aramaic words in any of the Parshios in Tefillin and in Mezuzos. Elah, the Gemara says, okay, we're going to have to reject that answer. Elah, Kasha, Kambi, Megillah, Kambi, Sfarim. So the Gemara says, fine, we're going to land on the following distinction. The Mishnah in Yadayim that says it has to be written in the original language, that's talking about Megillah. Our Mishnah that says that you have room to to write in other languages, that's talking about all other Sfarim. Now, Megillah, my time, Dechsiba, Kich, Savan, Vechil, Shonan. Okay, and by Megillah, why? Why does it have to be written specifically in its original language? Because in the Megillah it says, Kich, Savan, Vechil, Shonan. Now, admittedly, this is not the simple pshat in that pasuk, but in the world of Drush, the Gemara understands that this is a requirement to write it in the original language. My Targum Shekasu Mikra Ika. Give me examples of Aramaic found in the Megillah Esther. Amra Papa Benishma Pitgam HaMelech. The word Pitgam, or I pronounce it Pitgam, but that is that's Aramaic, right? The Pitgam means the laws. Or Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar V'Chol Nashim Yitnu Yikar Leva Aleihem. Women would give honor to their husbands. The word yikar, the Gemara is assuming, is an Aramaic word. Okay, so those are two Aramaic words found in the Megillah. Now, understood that we have now concluded with our first approach of the Gemara. The first approach of the Gemara is that there's a discrepancy between the Mishnah in Megillah versus the Mishnah in Yadayim. Mishnah Megillah says that it can be written in any language. Mishnah Yadayim says no, it has to be written in its original. The Hebrew words have to be Hebrew, the Aramaic words have to be Aramaic. And what are we saying now? This is the first approach of the Gemara. What we're saying is that our Mishnah is talking about all Sifrei Tanakh, can be written in any language, and the Mishnah Yadayim is talking about Megillah Esther. Well, unbelievable. Meaning the conclusion of the Gemara right now, Rav's conclusion is, Megillah Esther is more Chamor than any other Sefer in Tanakh. Megillah Esther has to be written in the original, all the other Sfarim in Tanakh can be written in any language, and still have the status of a Sefer. Right, that is a fascinating conclusion of the Gemara, at least according to Rava. Okay, we're leaving ourselves off now with a second approach, that of Ravashi. Ravashi is going to give our second answer, and then where we're also going to go ahead to tomorrow, Septuagint. We're going to talk about the Targum of the Torah by the 72 Chachamim. Okay, that'll be the beginning of tomorrow's year.